Deutsche Welle. Africa Link.
Hello and a warm welcome to Africa Link. We are coming to you live from our studios in Bonn, Germany. I'm Jane Ayeko-Kumet.
And I'm Crispin Mwakideo. In today's show, a survivor of alleged atrocities committed by former Gambian President Yahya Jammeh speaks out.
They came for us and they sent us to uncompleted building where we hands tied back of us and sent us to forest. The time we are going, that time we found out these people are going to kill us.
And in Anglophone Cameroon, the conflict there has displaced internally 160,000 people. So how are they coping with that?
The UN shouldn't wait until a million people are slaughtered in the Anglophone regions of this country before it steps in with the noise that it makes in such cases to get funding to do other issues.
Stay tuned for those stories and a lot more coming up shortly after this Global News Roundup.
My name is Jen Nyinge with DW News. Now, China has urged the United States and North Korea to demonstrate goodwill to create a conducive environment for a meeting scheduled for next month between President Donald Trump and Kim Jong-un. North Korea has threatened to cancel the talks if the U.S. insists it must get rid of its nuclear weapons. Chinese spokesperson Liu Kang said the meeting was a crucial opportunity to explore a political solution to the crisis of the Korean Peninsula.
All relevant parties, especially North Korea and the U.S., should meet each other halfway and demonstrate mutual goodwill and sincerity to actively create a conducive atmosphere for their leaders' meeting and realize the denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula and long-lasting peace and stability.
The first 4,000 doses of an experimental Ebola vaccine have arrived in Kinshasa. The vaccine will be used to combat an outbreak suspected to have killed 20 people in the Democratic Republic of Congo. The health ministry says that the vaccination program will start at the weekend. This is the first time the experimental vaccine has been deployed since it was developed during the last big outbreak of Ebola 2 years ago, which killed over 11,000 people in Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone. Now to Burundi, human rights groups say they do not think a referendum to be held on Thursday to extend President Pierre Nkurunziza's rule will be free and fair. There have been sporadic incidents of violence and abductions. Last week, 26 people were killed, 11 of them children. Interior Minister Pascal Baradie said they are still searching for those who carried out the attack.
We will spare no effort to stop these criminals, and the work is at an advanced stage. Burundi is working closely with the Democratic Republic of Congo, where they are hiding. I urge all of you to remain calm. We will do everything to stop and punish these criminals according to the law.
This news comes to you from DW in Bonn, Germany. European Union President Donald Tusk has lashed out at US President Donald Trump ahead of a meeting of European leaders on Wednesday evening tonight, which is expected to be dominated by the US withdrawal from the Iran deal and the issue of steel tariffs. Tusk told a news conference in Bulgarian capital Sofia that Trump had made Europe realize that it must be prepared to act by itself on the global stage. German Chancellor Angela Merkel spoke out about the Iran nuclear deal in Parliament and criticized US President Donald Trump for reneging on the agreement. 8 people were killed today and 30 others injured when a suicide bomber blew himself in a tent filled with mourners in Baghdad. The attack took place in the Taj district in the north of the Iraqi capital. For more news and information, visit our website dw.com or our Facebook page DW Africa. My name is Jane Nyinge.
You're listening to DW's Africa Link program. I'm Crispin Mwakideo.
And I'm Jane Ayeko-Kumet. Do remember that we are also streaming live on our DW Facebook page. So let your voice be heard by sharing your thoughts on the stories we are covering. Now, they say time heals wounds, but not when you've not seen justice served. That is the case of families of victims of 44 Ghanaian migrants who were murdered in the Gambia more than a decade ago. With the support of human rights groups, relatives of the victims have launched a new campaign to seek justice and bring former Gambian President Yahya Jammeh to book.
These renewed calls for justice come following fresh evidence from Human Rights Watch and Trail International that links Jammeh to the killings. Isaac Kalechi in Accra met the people, met some of the victims and sent us this report.
Wells of bad memories. In 2005, 44 Ghanaians were brutally murdered in the Gambia under the then President Yahya Jammeh. Efforts to get justice never yielded anything, but their relatives have never given up. Martin Chre would have been one of the 44, but he managed to escape.
To the extent that we are going to kill you by cutlass, by gun, by something of that sort, that is not what we think at the time. And we don't know that we are going to be killed till the time, night, that they came for us and they sent us to uncompleted building where we hands tied back of us and sent us to forest. The time we are going, that time we found out these people are going to kill us. In the police station, nothing shows that these people are going to kill us.
Martin is now joined by relatives of those that never made it to seek justice.
Traveling outside. So 6 months later, we...
That's Isaac Mensah. His father was among those killed. He was only 13 when his father disappeared while in the Gambia. Now 26, life has never been the same again.
It's not easy at all. Like, when you see my mom now, like, you'll be sad for her. Like, it's not easy.
A previous UN-backed investigative report said former Gambian president was not responsible for the killings, but new findings by Human Rights Watch pin him. Senior counsel Reid Brody says there is clear evidence that Jammeh ordered the killings.
What we can say is that the Ghanaian migrants and the other migrants were killed not by rogue elements acting on their own. They were killed by a death squad, the junglers, who took their orders directly from President Yahya Jammeh.
Human Rights Watch and some local rights groups are now launching a campaign to ensure that Jammeh is brought to justice. A representative of the family seeking justice told reporters in Accra that all they need is justice.
Let what supposed to be done to him be done to him. Let everything that needs to be done for the victims, me being part of it, for us to be at a safer side. Help us.
Isaac Kalechi in Accra filed that report. And certainly you've been also contributing to this report on our social media platform. For instance, Alitu Danaladi says, if poor people are being jailed every day in our societies for stealing goods to quench their hunger, why not prosecuting Yahya Jammeh, who ordered the killing of innocent Ghanaians and Nigerians?
Right, and there's a comment from Musika Sam who says about whether or not to bring Yahya Jammeh to Ghana to face justice. He says, do you even have to ask? Justice must be served for those people.
And Zimran says, let justice prevail and bring closure to families concerned and the nations involved.
Suleiman Jobe says, Jammeh must be brought to book by all means necessary.
And Prince Saint Obi says, let the man be in peace. After all, Buhari is there. What human rights have they done to him? Keep those comments coming. Not our opinions, but people's opinions. We will certainly present them. Now, sounding the alarm bells, the United Nations says some 160,000 people have been internally displaced in Anglophone Cameroon. This comes as government intensifies its offensive against what it calls terrorists.
Violence in Cameroon's northwest and southwest regions happens on a daily basis, pitting armed separatists who are accused of abductions versus government troops who are accused of extrajudicial killings and burning of entire villages. To get a better understanding of the humanitarian situation, I've been speaking to Aya Abine, head of the Aya Foundation.
The humanitarian situation here is terrible. It's terrible, and it's more so because those who have the voice either maintaining a silence, which to me is a silence in complicity with the atrocities that are committed down there. This is what is happening. This is the clear picture. The troops burn down villages, burn people in their houses, shoot indiscriminately at unarmed civilians. With that kind of scenario, you don't expect anything contrary from what is happening now. 160,000 people internally displaced, about 50,000 or more of such persons living in the forest, in bushes, 50,000 plus that are in Nigeria as refugees in abject misery.
Let's talk about those that have been displaced, those that you mentioned, some of them, like the 50,000 that are living in bushes, hiding in bushes. What kind of time frame do they have to survive? Because obviously they can't survive in the bushes for too long.
I don't know how they survive. I don't know. I heard one of them saying they eat even cockroaches when they see cockroaches pass by. They don't have food. There is no water. I just know a number of them are dying and are being buried in the bushes. And the most vulnerable of these are the kids and the women.
You accuse the international community, but the UN is the one that just released this statement.
The UN can do more than what it's doing.
And what do you want them
the
to do?
The UN has gone. Yeah, this is what the UN can do. The UN has gone to sovereign nations like Iraq, like Syria, with violent attitudes to impose itself. We are not calling for violence. The UN has everything it takes to step in and do conflict prevention. The UN shouldn't wait until a million people are slaughtered in the Anglophone regions of this country before it steps in with the noise that it makes in such cases to get funding to do other issues.
Aya Abine, president of the Aya Foundation in Anglophone Cameroon.
Crispin Sakwe Ngoi does agree with what Aya says. For instance, he writes here, the La République military has been responsible for the displacement of millions of people. However, we will defend ourselves since the United Nations, the USA and Britain have all decided to not to stop the dictatorial regime of Paul Biya from committing these atrocities and crimes of humanity.
Right. And Dimbenyi Oscar says, this is really horrible. I don't know what the international community is waiting for. Why is the UN pretending that all is well in Cameroon? He asks.
And Paul Rubin says, perhaps Nigeria should annex that region since Cameroonian government is being indifferent to the plight of the Anglophones.
And we'll leave it at that and move now to the global stage. The United States said on Wednesday that it is still hopeful about a planned meeting between North Korean leader Kim Jong-un and U.S. President Donald Trump. The two leaders are scheduled to have face-to-face talks on June the 12th in Singapore.
However, North Korea's government has threatened to walk away from the much-anticipated summit if Washington insists that North Korea ultimately give up its nuclear weapons. Abubakar Ijalo found out how the region is reacting to this news.
Regional countries including Japan, China and South Korea have all expressed concern over the current state of affairs. China has called on both parties to meet each other halfway and demonstrate mutual goodwill and sincerity to actively create a conducive atmosphere for their leaders' meeting. Japan, on the other hand, said they were keenly watching the situation. White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders said, and I quote, "We are still hopeful that the meeting will take place and will continue down that path, but at the same time, we've been prepared that this could be tough negotiations," end of quote. According to Sanders, U.S. President Donald Trump is ready if the meeting takes place, and if it doesn't, they will continue the maximum pressure campaign that's been ongoing. The latest developments have had an impact on the markets that are already dealing with U.S.-China trade tensions and inflation concerns.
Abubakar Ijalo with that report. Now we go back to our story on Cameroon, where the UN just released a report indicating that 160,000 people in the Anglophone region have been displaced. Now, a comment coming in here from Taku Obi says, all the UN does is make reports and talk. When will it ever act?
And Arnold Epanti says, whom the gods will destroy, they first make mad. The omens are there for Paul Biya to see.
Nyamba says, when the UN puts the number to 160,000, no, it's 10 times that number, and genocide is already happening.
And Stephanie Tetka Belong says, tyranny, these are the consequences of a tyrant. We are tired. We should destroy it by all means.
Not very pleasant comments coming there. People are certainly very bitter, Crispin. And if you're following us on our social media platform, you will certainly find a lot there. There are some disturbing images coming in from Anglophone Cameroon. But more comments here. Michelle Che says, it's more than what is happening.
Keep those comments coming in, and we'll read them whenever we can.
In case you've just joined us, you're listening to DW's Africa Link. I'm Jane Ayeko-Kumet.
And I'm Crispin Mwakideo. You can also listen live and comment on the stories we are airing by visiting our Facebook page, DW Africa. Still to come, Cameroonian farmers join efforts to save the Congo River Basin.
It is the responsibility of the whole world to protect this forest.
Now, laughter is the best medicine, but can it heal the scars of war? Well, at least that's what Mading Ngor, a South Sudanese activist in Juba, is hoping. And why not? As the conflict-ridden country resumes peace talks in Addis Ababa for the upteenth time, bringing laughter could help break the ethnic divide and bring the nation together.
And as Wake Simon Wudu reports, South Sudan's Ngor and Kenyan comedian Eric Omondi believe that comedy can be a remedy for peacemaking in South Sudan.
What I must see this, when you're approaching him, in fact, they start smiling, yeah? They're like... when you get him, like...
From senior government officials to ordinary people, hundreds of people gathered at Nyakron Cultural Center for an evening of laughter. The country's peace activist Madingor had again organized one big do-dubbed Junub comedy for peace, and he has gathered comedians from all walks of life. The show is aimed at campaigning for peace through creating and forging cohesion among the divided South Sudanese society, as explained by Ngor.
This is a nation that is not coming together. So what is that thing that can bring everyone together? And we believe it is comedy. People with religious, political differences, they come together and they laugh together. And in the process, we build confidence.
The show themes centered on culture, corruption, tribalism, and modernity. Peter Beer, a peace activist who heads the South Sudan Young Leaders Forum, agrees with Ngor.
South Sudanese need to restore the national fabric, social fabric, because we have gone to the extent where the war has divided us and has killed us, and that we have hated ourselves. And to a certain extent, sometimes we feel like we hate the country itself.
Dengai Gadluak is a fond fan of Ngor's comedy show.
You know, when people come together and people laugh together, it's actually a way of actually bringing peace together, bringing peace among the young people. You know, South Sudanese at the moment, they are actually divided. When people come up with initiatives like this and you invite international comedians, it's actually one of the ways that brings South Sudanese together, especially the youth.
And Gideon Benny, a government official, cannot disagree.
Comedian shows like this are healing exercise that contribute to the national healing and reconciliation process. And South Sudan is undergoing the national healing and reconciliation process, and that's why it is important that top comedian like Eric Omondi is to be brought so that people can talk.
So to promote his piece through comedy and make it even bigger, Ngor has gone regional, inviting renowned comedians like Kenya's Eric Omondi. Omondi, an award-winning comedian, says comedy can be a therapy in trauma healing.
The biggest tool to cohesion and unity and togetherness is that spirit of laughter, is that joy. Because humans are structured in a way that even in a family setting, when people are laughing, people are happy. And that's the moment that there's that spirit of unity. It is natural, yeah? Because you forget your differences.
The show also aims to inspire young comedians in South Sudan. In a country ruined by conflict, laughter may just be what the people need to wind up a day.
Laughter might just be what people need to wind up a day. That report was compiled by Simon Wake Wudu in South Sudan. Certainly, I do think it's a good idea to use comedy for peace.
It's a relief, you know, from all the wars and the conflicts and the killings that we always hear, to have a laugh and to relax and just have a good time with your family and neighbors. It's always good.
Some good creation there, that initiative that somebody comes up. Okay, let's try another option.
Exactly.
Hope when you combine the two, it might work. Let's just hope that tomorrow, as the peace talks resume, they will combine the laughter and things will work out.
Hopefully. Let's just acknowledge some people on our Facebook page. Suleiman Jobe says on the Jame story, on the Ghanaian story, the fact that Ghana wants to extradite him to face justice there. Suleiman Jobe says, Jame killed so many people for spiritual purposes. This is new.
Interesting. So many things come out when you're not in power anymore.
Exactly. And on the Cameroonian story also that we heard, the UN saying that 160,000 have been displaced in the Anglophone region. Lawrence Larry says the people of the Southern Cameroon have been cheated by the world.
That's a comment that has been coming on quite over time now.
They do feel cheated because they feel that much of their plight is not being talked about in the media and in the international forum.
Hopefully something happens now that we've started talking about it.
On the spot.
The United Nations has extended the mandate of the African Union peacekeeping mission in Somalia, also known as AMISOM, until the end of July. Such a development and most of the images that people from around the world get concerning Somalia is terrorism, the fighting there, and the civil war.
Now, but there is a side of Somalia that many people are not aware of. That is the one that is beautiful, pristine beaches and resorts that boost a country along the sideways. Also considered the country that has been considered war-torn. DW's Andrew Asike is one of the lucky few to have experienced this hidden paradise of Mogadishu. Take a listen.
Soothing guitar playing on a calm beach, but this is not your everyday vacation spot. I am at the Lido Beach in Mogadishu, Somalia. The temperatures are quite high, but no one apart from me seems to worry. Even the squealing children on the beach who are pulling on the tail of a straw-hatted, braying donkey went around enjoying themselves while others were left scooping the golden sand and making magnificent images from their imagination. The tourists and city residents at Lido Beach are enjoying some of the most spectacular sights and beautiful sceneries in the Horn of Africa. Here at the beach, I met Somali residents who live abroad but have come back home for vacation.
You see, I'm here without my security guard. I'm enjoying with my generation, you see, without fear. I'm not fearing now. Compared to 3 years ago, back to 3 years ago, Shabab was controlling this area. None of them, they cannot come here.
And salam alaikum. My name is Hanan. I came from Minnesota. I like to swim. I love Mogadishu. It's very nice, safe, and pretty. And I like it here.
Please don't miss out the beautiful Lido. Come and visit us, inshallah. It's a beautiful place. It needs us. So everybody, come here. Thanks.
There were some tourists from China too. One of them told me about his experience in Somalia.
Peaceful, people are friendly and welcome, very good hospitality. We have to say that Somalia is not that Somalia we think.
A report by the United Nations Economic Commission for Africa, UNECA, says that internal conflict, dilapidated tourism facilities, untrained personnel and negative publicity have dented Somalia's tourism industry. But now, many business people are keen to change this and make a living from the unexplored tourism industry. I met Adan Hassan, who is a businessman and aims to profit from the tourism sector once his country stabilizes.
Somalia has the longest coast in Africa. That's why now we need to think about how we're going to build in the tourist destination and the people to start to come to thinking about Somalia in different way, not like the Somalia they are worried, especially Mogadishu, it is one of the most dangerous in the world. So yes, there was a time, but not now.
According to a joint FAO Norwegian survey conducted in Somalia, the country's coastal and offshore seas appear to have considerable potential for fisheries, as shown by studies of nutrient levels and estimates of fish populations obtained from surveys by research vessels. Somalia tourism also includes the landmark of Shanghai Old City. The city is known for its scenic beauty and the old architectural heritage.
Andrew Asike with that report in Mogadishu. And Ayeko, one wonders what would happen to Somalia when it was, you know, if it was a peaceful country where tourists could just come and lounge on the beaches.
Probably I would be lounging on the beach right now. But that report is quite encouraging. I might just consider my next holiday Somalia.
Who knows?
Living Planet Africa.
The Congo Basin rainforest is spread across six countries in Central Africa. Its biodiversity hotspot, home to hundreds of three species, some 10,000 plant species and endangered wildlife, including forest elephants, gorillas and chimpanzees. But the forest is disappearing at an alarming rate. It is often cleared for agriculture. Now, environmentalists are trying to get farmers to adopt more sustainable methods to make growing crops compatible with the forest and protecting it. DW's Njala Kilian Chimtom sent us this report from Cameroon, and my colleague Crispin over here just found time and joined the environment desk to voice this report. Take a listen.
In the searing equatorial heat, Emmanuel Koo and his family are busy planting fruit-bearing tree plants on their two-acre maize and cassava farm. They are practicing a farming technique introduced by the Wild Agroforestry Center, or ICRAF. It's designed to improve farmers' yields and to keep the Congo River Basin forest alive. The Congo River Basin rainforest spans some 500 million acres and is rich in biodiversity. With over 600 tree species and 1,000 animal species, including elephants, gorillas, and chimpanzees. The forests are being cleared to make way for economic interests such as agriculture, mining, and industry, putting biodiversity on the line. The Worldwide Fund for Nature, also known as WWF, estimates that the forest could lose two-thirds of its size if current trends continue. Hanson Njerforti, country director for WWF, says the environmental impact could be devastating.
The Amazon and the Congo Basin forests are really the lungs of the earth. And it is the responsibility not only of Cameroon, not only of the countries of the Congo Basin, it's the responsibility of the whole world to protect these forests.
Farming is one of the major causes of deforestation in the Congo River Basin, which is why the Wild Agroforestry Center introduced agroforestry to the region. It allows farmers to earn money while using less farmland, and that reduces the need for deforestation. It is this system that Emmanuel Koo from Anyajua in Cameroon's northwest region is now using. He began farming when he couldn't get a white-collar job, but he didn't find it easy. The soil was failing and the yield was poor. Now, thanks to agroforestry practices introduced by ICRAF, farmers like Koo have escaped a life of poverty. He used to farm cocoa and coffee for export, as well as vegetables. But now he has found a way to make greater returns from his farm.
Farmers in the domain of agroforestry have a stable lifestyle because the fruit trees, integrated and medicinal plants, cause them to harvest throughout the whole year rather than waiting for coffee that comes on only at the end of the year.
Most of the trees planted here are non-timber fruit-bearing varieties. The Wild Agroforestry Center estimates that more than 100,000 farmers across Cameroon are already benefiting from this new way of farming. Zach Chonjeu, regional coordinator at the Wild Agroforestry Center for West and Central Africa, says it is part of a larger scheme to conserve the Congo River Basin rainforest.
I don't see why farmers should protect the forest just because they are talking that the climate change is coming, there is a problem with the flooding and so on. So what? The farmer will ask you. But if you tell him by planting the improved material, you harvest it in 3 years' time, you diversify the source of your income, it will start listening to why this ecosystem should be protected.
Africa stands to suffer tremendously as global temperatures rise. But environmentalists hope the widespread adoption of agroforestry will safeguard the forests of the Congo River Basin and help mitigate the effects of climate change.
Thank you very much, Crispin, for presenting that report. I'm of the impression that you certainly learned something from it.
Oh, of course I did, and it was my pleasure. You know, it's always nice to gather these or to report or hear these such positive stories that are taking place in Africa.
There's a lot of initiative taking place down the continent there.
Absolutely. It's not just doom and gloom as sometimes we're made to believe. Anyway, thank you for contributing to this program today. I'm Crispin Mwakideu.
And I'm Jane Ayeka Kumet. I'll be here tomorrow, same time.